And now our first feature. In an entertaining and witty new book, Norwich author and artist tells the story of Norwich and Norfolk through some of its historic gates. The feature is written by Derek James and read for us by Peter Dennington.
Shut that gate. Private. No hawkers. Beware of the dog. A simple number. Or maybe a name. The notices on gates come in all shapes and sizes. Some welcome visitors, while others are there to stop them in their tracks. There are those which are open, others firmly shut, and then there are the big old gates with stories to tell. And in Norfolk, we have, or have had, many which are real works of art. They are part of our history, which is all too often ignored or forgotten about. All that has changed, thanks to the author and illustrator Peter Kent of Norwich, who has spent the last couple of years walking through, peering at, and discovering all about our gates. Past and present, to produce a glorious new book, putting them at long last in the spotlight. A few years ago, Peter, a man with a keen sense of humour and a sharp pencil, who has written and illustrated some glorious books, came up with The Fatal Gates of Norwich, in which he let his imagination run wild while it came to telling gate tales. It sold out. This time, the stories behind the county gates are true, and they are quite amazing. Our old gates have seen it all. Norfolk, says Peter, has a great number of wonderful gates of all sorts. Some, like that of Castle Acre, are simply functional. Others, like the towering brick portal of Oxborough Hall, combine defensive qualities with a bravura display of prestige and power. And many are almost purely decorative, and they are to be admired. Towns, castles, monasteries and stately homes all had their gates, large numbers of which still survive, though many have been demolished as society has moved both physically and metaphorically towards a more open aspect, said Peter. Gates in Norwich, Great Yarmouth and King's Lynn were not taken down just because they got in the way of traffic. By the start of the 19th century, their symbolic and military functions were as outworn and decayed as their fabric. Survivors, like Lynn's magnificent south gates, which still greet visitors to the town, are very much the exception. The gate, in its capacity as threshold to a town or grand house, was the place where the great and the good arrived with pomp and ceremony, where the victorious entered in triumph and the defeated slunk away, Peter explained. Kings and queens, pilgrims and prisoners have all passed and still pass beneath the arches of Norfolk gates. Religious pilgrims are much rarer now than in medieval times, but are still seen in Walsingham, plodding barefoot through the Priory Gate. His words and his illustrations bring the story of 25 gates across the county alive, and the book offers the reader, for the first time, the opportunity to go in search of gates. The journey starts at the old and now vanished East Gate in Lynn, with an illustration of Jonas Hanway heading towards it. In 1769, he was the first man in England to carry an umbrella. He was reviled and mocked. By 1800, the public accepted it came in handy when raining, and a raised umbrella passed without comment. It ends at the South Gate in Yarmouth, which was built in about 1320, an impressive structure combining elements of display and defence. In the story of the Bishop's Gate in Norwich, Peter tells us about how in 1975, Bishop Maurice Wood launched a campaign to get his clergy on the move. He bought 36 mopeds at a bargain price and issued them to a selected band of clergy. He blessed them and their vehicles from the steps of his house before the convoy of crash-helmeted, dog-collared clerics putt-putted through the gate to go forth and spread the gospel. The campaign was not a success, but this book will be. I love it, and I suspect many of you will too. The author, by the way, lives behind a small and undistinguished gate.